This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it? Equal.
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm sitting across from Carey Jr. II. He is the show's producer, is in studio with me.
I am. How you doing?
Hey. So today, we want to continue this series of conversations we've been having with some of the winners of the 2024 Pulitzer Prizes. A surprising number of them, at least surprising to me, were doing work that fits under the umbrella, the kind of things we talk about here on Created Equal. And today's episode is about something that is really difficult, I think, to imagine or understand. And it's a little frightening. It's about the number of Black girls and women in Chicago who go missing, and a really dispiriting and disappointing response from police in that city to these disappearances. Really, a negligence that that is proven by some of the work that these reporters did to be consistent, to be just a part of the way they deal with the African American community in that city.
Yeah, they released a report, they being the City Bureau of Chicago and the Invisible Institute, collaborated on this report, and it's entitled Missing in Chicago. And two journalists, Trina Reynolds Tyler, who is a journalist and data collector from the Invisible Institute, and Sarah Conway, who's a senior reporter at the City Bureau, worked together to analyze 340,000 missing person reports. And they did it from 2000. They looked at the data from 2000 to 2021. And they found that Black people, but more specifically Black women, are disproportionately represented in that data. So, and along with that, they uncovered issues with Chicago's police's practices, there's processing delays, there's misrepresented data, all of that. And we get into all of that in this conversation.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking with Sarah and Trina. And I've got a little bit of anxiety, I think, about one part of this, which is how you fix a problem like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so deeply ingrained in the culture of the police department, what they're describing here, this idea of not taking seriously the complaints of Black people, the safety of Black people, the lives of Black people.
And they even go as far as to, in their reporting, they talk about how police officers use their background as a way to almost not justify, but
the background of the victims.
The background of the victims informs how they respond when those cases are reported.
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about police reform in this country and how we repair the relationship between police and African American communities. I think this gets at the crux of that and the difficulty of ever thinking that that you can make real progress. Sarah Conway and Trina Reynolds Tyler, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you for having us on. We're really happy to be here.
Yes. And congratulations to both of you on your win of the Pulitzer Prize in 2024 for local reporting for Missing in Chicago. So, Trina, I want to start with you and have you talk about how you started investigating missing person cases with the human rights data analysis and the pattern that that emerged from that.
Yeah, so when I've been at the Invisible Institute for 8 years, and in 2018, I went to grad school to get my master's in public policy at the University of Chicago. I was already interested in missing persons cases, and specifically at the Invisible Institute, I lead a project called Beneath the Surface, which interrogates the intersection between gender-based violence and policing. So I knew I wanted to use technology to parse through public records to tell stories. And when I interned at the Human Rights Data Analysis Group in 2019, I brought with me a FOIA request. It was like a document that had a data frame on it, and it was all open missing persons cases up until 20 for about 16 years. And I learned how to scrape that PDF That was one of the first PDFs I learned how to scrape using R, which is a programming software. Fast forward to 2020, I'm at the Invisible Institute called Beneath the Surface. We use machine learning to parse through police, you know, narrative text under police misconduct records. And one of the groupings of complaints that were identified in our process was a set of 54 allegations of misconduct against Chicago police relating to missing persons cases. And that was like neglect of missing persons cases, mm-hmm. like disrespect to parents, all the way to premature closure of a case, even though someone had not been found. And at that point, that's when I reached out to Sarah Conway, and this partnership began.
Okay, so I want to talk more specifically about what you guys found in the investigation and what the scope of the project was. But I want to start with just some harrowing numbers. 70% of the missing persons in Chicago are African American. 57% of them are Black children, and 30% of them are Black girls between the ages of 10 and 20. I mean, it's really hard just to even fathom those kinds of numbers. Sarah, can you tell us more about what's going on there and what you guys learned?
We found in our investigation that the missing persons crisis in Chicago disproportionately impacts Black Chicagoans. As you mentioned, Black people do make up about 2/3 of all missing persons cases in Chicago. And while the Chicago Police Department has claimed that the services for families are equal and fair across race and zip codes, we found that there are not only massive data gaps that make it really hard to prove that through the Chicago Police Department's own data. But we did interviews with, you know, families over 2 years, police officials, public officials, and people who are working with missing persons, families in the city, to show a different pattern, one that is really rooted in neglect, the delay and denial of missing persons cases that has led to the murders of Black women and girls in the city, as well as a whole array of illegal behaviors from police officers in their dealing with missing persons cases. One of our early findings that really showed up in the misconduct data that was really a rock to our investigation was that, under Illinois law and Chicago police policy, police officers cannot deny or tell anyone to wait any amount of time before filing a missing persons report. However, when we talked to Black families, we often heard that they were being told to wait, sometimes 24 to 48 hours, or that they were, police officers would imply that, you know, a loved one was out with a boyfriend or that she had run away, that there was some reason to explain the missingness, and in turn, police, you know, denying the family a missing persons report. We also, another core finding of our investigation was that families felt in general that police were really dismissive of them and their loved ones. Oftentimes they felt that, you know, police would kind of hyper-focus on an area of their loved one's life. For instance, their age, imply that, you know, the loved one was somehow that they were missing because of substance use disorder or another public health issue that the family might be dealing with. And that in turn, that bias would lead to police conducting slower investigations, collecting less evidence or losing evidence, and oftentimes leaving the weight of the investigation on the family itself. We would hear from Black families that they had to garner their own resources, you know, to find people on their block to go out and look for their loved ones when they were missing. And the detectives were not there with them.
Wow.
We also saw in, and I want to pass to Trina to kind of dive into police data. Mm-hmm. But our analysis of police data over 2 decades really had us call into the department's data keeping practices. We found out that the missing persons form is one of the last paper-based forms that the Chicago Police Department is using. And using that, which requires them to then input it by hand into their digital system, we found that that would delay the assignment of detectives. And that in, you know, police records from 2017 to 2021, police were missing 45% of a key data point, just about the time and the date that police would even arrive to investigate missing persons cases.
Yeah.
And so we also found in doing our own analysis, which required us gathering records from, you know, the medical examiner in Cook County, looking at homicide data that the Chicago Police Department had, comparing that with news reports and other missing persons police data that we had, that there were multiple cases that ended in homicide that were marked as non-criminal in CPD's own data, which means that police were handling missing persons cases that ultimately resulted in a homicide that this and, you know, this individual ended up being murdered. Mm-hmm. But in the police's data, it looked as if there was no crime actually associated to the missing persons case, which we believe, you know, poses a question about that, you know, the police department's data keeping practices in general, the integrity of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Trina, Sarah was talking about the data here and how it's kept, how it's not kept, the integrity of it. I thought maybe you could talk more about what you found and how hard it was, I guess, to piece this together because of that.
Absolutely. So in order to really get us started, we have to go back in time to 2017, where there was a city council public safety meeting and folks were up in arms. They were asking law enforcement, you know, city council members in this specific committee were asking law enforcement, you know, what's going on with missing Black girls? And CPD officials went up and said, you know, between 2000 and 2016, nearly all of the juveniles who went missing were returned or were located.
Hmm.
Now, at the time that he said that statistic, no one dig deeper into what he meant with, you know, what he meant by those stats. In our reporting, we found that, you know, the time period that he was referencing included two cases of Black teenage girls who were murdered. But law enforcement officers wrote in the paperwork, you know, missing has been located, victim offender of a crime, no. In the case of Shavonna Prather, for example, you know, she was murdered in April of 2002. And early in the day of April 26th, law enforcement wrote in a paper, you know, missing has been located, spoke with the complainant, missing located, victim offender of a crime. No, like 2 or 3 hours later, her body was actually found in the hundreds of Chicago. She had been deceased for days.
Wow.
And that's confusing, right? It's like, well, so what happened here? How did this law enforcement write in a paper and believe, you know, this person was located when mm-hmm. they actually weren't? And then we fast forward to the year 2016, young person Desiree Robinson, who, you know, was reported missing November 29th. On December 20th, law enforcement wrote in an article, I mean, in their underlying reports, missing was located, victim or offender of a crime. No. At the time, she was actually being sex trafficked. And 4 days later, she was murdered.
Hmm.
Her body was found. So yes, technically she was found 4 days after they closed her case and she had been murdered. And so it calls the question, were they ever looking for her in the first place?
Right.
And so those two cases in the data are labeled as not closed, non-criminal, which is like, it says incident closed, not criminal in nature. If you look at their underlying documents, it looks like the law enforcement agent talked to the family and that the missing was found and that they were totally fine, when in fact they had not been. And so when we receive a sea of records, nearly 100% of them labeled as closed non-criminal, meaning person found and incident not criminal in nature, it makes us question the integrity of the data. It makes us dig even deeper. And so from that, you know, aside from even identifying cases where we identified 4 cases in total where officers falsely alleged that the person had been found, even though they had not been, we also identified 11 homicides that were labeled in the data as closed, non-criminal, even though a homicide investigation had opened in connection to the case. And even though it was very clear that when that person was found, they had died by homicide. When you look at the missing persons data, you know, if I were to pull the data from the past 2 decades, again, it would say nearly 100% of them are closed non-criminal. And it would actually show you a handful of cases that become later associated with a crime. And in that database, you see 10 cases that were missing persons cases and became homicides. You see the case of Joanna Wright, who was initially a missing person, and her case became a kidnapping because information was later learned that she was kidnapped. You would even see instances of sexual assault, right? Someone who was missing, and then they later learned that this person had experienced a sexual assault, right? So the case went from non-criminal to criminal. But when we did that digging, like I said earlier, we were actually able to find 11 additional homicides on top of the 10. And, you know, the issue there is that when you're looking at the data, everything is one big glob, and it makes it's one big mass of obscured information, ultimately, right? It is a sea of cases, over 344,000 of them, where Chicago police cannot tell us whether or not how many people were found alive, how many people were found dead, nor can they actually, do they have a process that is dependable to verify that a law enforcement officer has actually found the person. And so when you couple that with dismissive attitudes that law enforcement have around missing persons cases, you end up with cases like Desiree Robinson, where officers were thinking, well, I'm sure she'll come back.
She'll show up.
You know, I'm sure she'll come back. And but actually, she was being sex trafficked at the time. And had her body not been found, we would not even know that, you know, we would not even know that she was a missing and murdered person. We would think that she was just a young person who went missing from her family, and that her family just, you know, her family was reunited with, even though she had not been.
She was dead. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with reporters Sarah Conway and Trina Reynolds Tyler about missing in Chicago. We'll be right back. More Created Equal.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson. Our guests are Sarah Conway. She is a senior reporter at City Bureau in Chicago, and Trina Reynolds Tyler, who is a journalist and the data director at the Invisible Institute. Together, they won the 2024 Pulitzer Prize in local reporting for Missing in Chicago, which takes a look at the prevalence of missing young people in Chicago, in particular, African American and Latino young people are disproportionately represented among those missing, and the response of the police department there has not been what you might expect, given the level of crisis that's involved. I want to start this part of the conversation talking more about what's happening to families who are trying to get help from the police when someone does go missing. You guys report that submitting missing person reports is no easy task. We talked a little about that in the first segment, but I want to talk about a specific case, Tammy Pittman, who experienced a lot of delays when she tried to report her daughter missing. Sarah, can you tell us more about that?
Yes. Tammy Pittman is the mother of Shante Bohannon. In 2016, Shante was 20 years old. She grew up and lived most of her life on the west side of the city, and her and her mom were starting afresh. They'd moved to the south side. You know, Shante, as a young person, was making friends. She had gotten even like her first job at a Southside Taco Bell. She was, as her older sister described it, really finding herself. She was feeling like an adult and had a certain level of feeling like she was resetting her life on a good path. Mm-hmm. It was in the summer of 2016 that Shante was with her boyfriend, who was shot to death. She called her family. She had run and was hiding in a convenience store, and asked her parents to come and get her because she had witnessed her boyfriend's murder. Her family came and got her, and she really was had her family circle around her. Gun violence in Chicago is a crisis that impacts many families, particularly mm-hmm. many Black families. And the family is really trying to protect Shante. She ultimately went missing a few weeks later when she had gone to her boyfriend's family's house to pay respects after his funeral. And her mother went to report her missing. You know, she remembered seeing her in the morning before she went to church. And then she came home and her daughter wasn't there. Ultimately, her mom went to go report her missing after Shante had called one of her sisters and said that someone was holding a gun to her head in this house and that she was not able to leave. Mm. It was an incident that we found documented in police reports when we looked specifically into this case. You know, the family mobilized, they tried to find her, they went to the house. Ultimately, Tammy Pittman went to report her daughter missing, and officers suggested to her that her daughter had actually run away, which was, you know, as we talked about earlier, sadly, a common experience for Black families, that police would insinuate that their loved one was not actually missing. And so she had to go back with her daughter's father. And finally, police accepted the report. But they urged her, you know, like they had urged her the first time she had went to wait 24 hours. She was able to, you know, ultimately secure the report. And she, you know, asked the officers go and finally search the home. But they found that she wasn't there. They actually found nothing. Mm. 2 days later, her daughter's body was found naked in a garbage bag in an abandoned garage on 92nd Street in Burnside on Chicago's South Side. To this day, the cause of death is undetermined. And the family's been left with, you know, a lot of questions about what happened to Shante Bohannon. When we had connected with the family, Shante's mother had not heard from a detective in years. Her missingness and ultimately her death had deeply impacted the family. You know, when we connected with this family, like other families that we had connected with, Shante's mother was not aware that, you know, police cannot tell her to wait any amount of time, that it was actually illegal per state law and police policy for them to deny her a missing persons report. And then for them to, you know, for them to insinuate that she should have waited 24 hours before coming. You know, she wasn't aware that because it was a case that her daughter's life was likely in danger, that police should have moved with a lot of speed to look for her and find her. And so talking to Shante Bohannon's mother and sister, we we saw, you know, the pattern that had showed up in other Black families that we had spoken to, you know, the delay and denial of cases, the lack of collecting evidence that ultimately would leave cases open and not closed.
And Trina, talk about what happens when officers are found to have done things like this. I mean, there were complaints filed against officers because they refused to let people submit missing person reports. But what do the consequences look like when that happens?
Based on the police misconduct records and the history on the issue, there is zero accountability for law enforcement who are participating in this behavior. Since we published our findings and also reached out to Chicago Police Department numerous times, throughout the process of our reporting, as well as right at the end with our findings, they've not said anything to us other than we investigate these cases equally across race, sex, zip code, etc. But when we look at their police data, as they don't even, their records are not even complete enough for them to do their own self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if they are just turning an eye away from missing persons cases because they feel that it's not as important or that people don't want to be found. And again, like in our reporting, we found premature closures. We've seen a pattern of people's bodies even being found in the morgue, families not being reunited with their families, in the families' bodies not being reunited with their loved ones. In one of the misconduct records, you know, there was a family who said they were upset because I think her name is Carmelita Johnson. She was in the morgue for quite some time and law enforcement didn't do their due diligence to just like identify her body. She was in the morgue and had been deceased for months until her family was finally reunited with her by way of another detective who had like taken interest in the case. So even when detectives see other detectives not really doing what they're supposed to do, there are some who are within the department who take the initiative and say, no, we're going to get this case off. But as far as like accountability for officers who are not taking action, there are none.
And how does this fit, I guess, into the kind of broader narrative of the relationship between Chicago police and the Black community? I mean, I used to live in Chicago, so I know some about that. But I think if you've never even been to Chicago, you've seen the headlines about police violence in Chicago that is practiced against African Americans. You've seen, you know, stories about this long-running tension between the Black community and Chicago police with regard to all kinds of things, including, you know, certain neighborhoods in the city where African-Americans are brutalized and not protected by the police. Can you put this problem, this issue of not responding to missing persons, I guess, in the universe of that relationship?
So there are two things that are happening here and they are so deeply connected. And this is a really important piece to drive home on. In the city of Chicago, you know, according to Dorothy Tucker's reporting from CBS News, most victims of crime in the city are Black women. And this is an analysis that she did from victim data from reported crime. And at the same time that we see survivors of crime experiencing violence, we are seeing officers who have historically been have tortured, have disrespected, neglected a certain set of population tasked with responding to these survivors of violence, mm-hmm. survivors of crime. And when you have some of these officers who are responding to someone who they perceive to be an offender, someone who they perceive to be worthy of or deserving of the crime that has happened to them, you find yourself in a place where violence is just, there is a landscape and condition for violence to be cultivated and to brew and fester.
Yeah. And so
what we're looking.
So in other words, some of what's going on here is that the police are assigning some level of criminality or association with criminality to an entire race, really, and that that ends up being a justification for not taking some violence seriously. In other words, you live in a community where all kinds of stuff is happening. I don't need to spend my time trying to figure that out. Is that an accurate reflection of what's happening?
I think we see this. One of the stories that come up big for us in this case is the story of Sonia Rouse, who was a survivor of intimate partner violence at some point in her life. She also struggled with substance use abuse disorder. She also struggled deeply with postpartum depression after the birth of her daughter, mm-hmm. and was later diagnosed with having, mental health issues, needing treatment, et cetera. She was in an abusive relationship with a guy, and the officer who was on her case, when the way that he engaged with Sonia's mother after Sonia was reported missing was very much, well, your daughter is an alcoholic. Like it was victim blaming and disrespectful. Hmm. And, Sonia's mom is telling him, this detective Yaversky, I went to save her from this guy's house at least two times. He has physically abused her. You need to speak with him. Not only did the detective never speak with the guy that Sonia was last seen with, even though that man was technically incarcerated at the time and could have easily been interviewed by law enforcement, when we look at that detective's misconduct records, he himself had a history of enacting violence on his wife and his daughter. Mm-hmm. It is in police misconduct records. And so we see, it makes you think, okay, one, this detective is basically victim blaming, dehumanizing this woman and deeming that she's deserving of her missingness. But then on the second front, it's this detective, this who you're sending to essentially look for this survivor, hopefully, of intimate partner violence. This detective himself is a perpetrator of violence within his own home. Mm. And so it really makes us think deeply about, the big accountability systems that exist within policing and police misconduct. And then also the ways that literally impacts how they are showing up for community members, many community members who folks have stereotyped as deserving of their circumstance.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about missing in Chicago. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson. Our guests this hour are Sarah Conway, a senior reporter at City Bureau in Chicago. Also with us is Trina Reynolds Tyler. She's a journalist and the data director at the Invisible Institute. And together, they were the winners of the 2024 Pulitzer Prize in local reporting for Missing in Chicago, which takes a look at the prevalence of African Americans among missing people in Chicago, especially young Black women, and their overrepresentation among those missing persons. Also, took a real look at the way the police in Chicago respond to reports of missing persons and this overall issue. I want to focus this part of the conversation on, I guess, how you even begin to think about fixing something like this. I mean, what you two have been describing in this interview is a deep, I would call it a deep cultural problem within the police department there that that refuses to acknowledge at a basic level even the humanity of the people who were involved here, the victims themselves. And then, of course, their families who are trying desperately to get help. I wonder if we can talk just a little about maybe what is going on in Chicago to try to correct this, and I guess what could go on. You know, we live in an era where it seems every city is thinking in some way about police reform. I just have a really hard time thinking of how you fix this kind of problem. Sarah Conway, I guess I'll start with you.
Chicago is now the seat of being examined by the state. The state has a new task force. It started in 2023. It's the Illinois Task Force on Missing and Murdered Chicago Women that is looking into this issue. They're trying to examine policies and institutions like police and child welfare programs. They want to look at data collection systems, and they are really interested in understanding how to better provide support for impacted people, families, and communities. We know that some impacted families are actually have been involved in the task force. One family sits on the task force in particular. Illinois is following other states that have looked into the issue. Montana had its own state task force that looked into how this issue shows up for indigenous communities in the state. We know that missing persons is a national issue and it impacts communities differently. But we've found through our research and looking at the findings of the Montana Task Force, that there is similarities between how this manifests and impacts Native people in Montana and Black people in states like Minnesota, which had its own task force as well, and Illinois. The state is convening people, law enforcement from across the state, policymakers, experts on these issues that are connected to, from child welfare to trafficking, to convene and really study this. We also know that task force nationally have shown the need for community-based solutions. That's something that, when you talk to community groups in Chicago who have been working on the issue of missing persons for years, COCO is one example, they've really driven home the point that solutions that are not, co-created with survivors are not real solutions. We've seen from the findings of other task force in Montana and Minnesota that there's a real need to have better record keeping. And record keeping sometimes outside of police. The task force in those states have really found that there's a deep mistrust with police over their handling of missing person systems. We found in Montana that, they have created a non-police civilian pathway for families to be able to report their loved ones missing without having to interact with police at all. And so we know in Chicago from talking to impacted communities and survivors that there's a real desire here as well for there to be more resources for families, for there to be more community-based solutions to the crisis, for there to be more awareness around the public health issues that are really connected to why people go missing, which is, our housing crisis, inadequate public mental health care systems, the prevalence of substance use disorder, domestic violence. So that all leads us to now, where there was legislation that recently was signed to create a mayor's task force on missing women in Chicago. And it's a piece of legislation that will likely go to be examined and debated in the Public Safety Committee in Chicago City Council, because now the city wants to further look into this issue. And so I think that when we're talking about task forces, and there's a real importance to have them, because they are able to, you know, look deeply at issues. But I think the things that families really want is that they want solutions, and they want accountability for police. They want non-police alternatives to make sure that they are receiving equal care and treatment when their loved ones go missing. And even the prevention of violence. You know, we talked to so many families that they were really clear-eyed in understanding, you know, the things around circling around their loved one going missing in the first place, or their loved one's murder. And so I think that Illinois and Chicago are part of this larger movement of task force looking at these issues across the country, because it's really a national issue. In Chicago, it's manifested and deeply impacted Black people, but the system of how police handle missing persons in Chicago, well, there is a clear bias in how Black families are treated. You know, this issue also impacts Latino communities in Chicago. We know that missing persons are underreported in that community because of fear of reporting to police and law enforcement authorities because of immigration status. And so, you know, the task force here are part of a trajectory, you know, nationwide, and looking deeper into these issues.
At the same time, progress or change kind of requires an acknowledgement on the part of the police that there's something wrong, that they're not doing it correctly. And that, I guess, leads me to wonder about the response of the Chicago Police Department to this information and to this revelation that, look, you're not handling this in the way that you should. Trina, what do we know about what Chicago police say about this?
Well, we know that Chicago police have been attempting to paint a picture that everything is fine with missing persons cases, and that they are closing a majority of these cases, nearly 100% of them, and nearly 100% of them are not criminal in nature. Mm-hmm. I think it's like they need that narrative to exist in order to turn an eye away from it. They are speaking a narrative like, oh, everything is okay, people usually come home. And they often say, at least when we spoke to law enforcement, they're like, and people are actually concerned with homicides. You know, like, we have so many homicides where homicide, you know, our detectives are getting more and more resources in these kind of areas. Special victims unit, special victims investigations are just have not really been prioritized. And, you know, I say to that, that we've clearly demonstrated with our reporting, and you can look back at history, even looking at the number one 911 call that, you know, in the city of Chicago, which is like calls for domestic violence, which is it's that we can actually prevent violence from happening when folks are actually treating survivors of crime with dignity and respect, and giving them a place to be safe, instead of attempting to really double down after a murder has already happened. You know, we're at a place in society where, you know, we're able to come up with some more data-driven solutions. The Chicago Police Department collect a lot of data, and, you know, it's what is their point in collecting? And they also highlight, you know, we are a data-driven, you know, department, and we are using the most high tech, et cetera, in order to address crime in this city. But they're totally just like not including missing persons within their framework, which is based on research, based on, you know, well-respected research, and also from our reporting, which is that missing persons is deeply woven into trafficking. Yeah. It's missing persons is deeply woven into homicide. It's deeply woven into intimate partner violence. And there's a, and what we know from studies is that people who are committing violence, like in street areas, even mass shooters, right? They have a, there is a history of violence that arises in the home before that big moment, and all of these people are murdered, and police, law enforcement, and the Public Safety Administration in general across the nation should be thinking about violence prevention and the ways that you can, they can use police data to better understand what is driving crime, instead of again focusing like offender, we got to put them in jail. It's like, how do we make sure that this crime, this criminal offense does not happen? And when I talk to community members, they say, well, when I call police and I need help and I know that a crime is about to come, something bad is coming and I can feel it, police tell me there's nothing I can do for you. Mm-hmm. Did a crime happen? They often don't give them incident reports. And we won't be able to see full pictures of what's happening in specific concentrated neighborhoods and see the ways it's spilling over across into other neighborhoods today until we actually take a look at the root of the issue. And law enforcement has to actually acknowledge that they're kind of a bit of a conflict of interest when it comes down to the kind of strategies that they're employing when responding to survivors of violence.
Trina, I also want to have you talk just a little bit. We've only got a few minutes left about that community impact. The idea of losing a family member is hard enough, but then realizing that you lost that family member because, in part, the police would not do what they could have done to prevent that. Can you talk about the effect of that on the Black community in Chicago? The fact that this happens so frequently.
Well, one, it fuels the it further fuels the distrust into police. Of course, period. Yeah. And like, communities are constantly creating other kinds of response mechanisms to horrible violent incidents that happen in their communities, and the city and Public Safety Administration in general need to better learn how to tap into those systems outside of police, because like police have continued to and continue like have in the past and continue to really harm and disrupt these relationships with families. But it also causes people to go into a deep distress and depression, and it impacts the way that they raise their other children. Mm. I remember speaking to one family who was like, I'm so glad that this young man in my life, he has a job, he's a good kid, you know, but he doesn't go outside. He's afraid. And she's speaking herself, one of our sources, she's talking about how she's afraid herself of, you know, when her child leaves the door, because folks are just not feeling safe. And I think that when we are, again, cultivating and creating these conditions where people are so afraid, too afraid to go outside, and the systems that are built to keep them safe, they're actually scared of those systems as well, we create a very dangerous underground scenario where people, community members, put their safety into their own hands, and we see an escalation of intercommunal conflict. Because again, like what's happening here is two pronged. We see like folks, women and girls being exploited, and then law enforcement being complicit and enabling in the exploitation of this population of people.
Yeah. Okay, Sarah Conway and Trina Reynolds Tyler, it was really great to have both of you here with us on Created Equal to talk about missing in Chicago. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
So it's hard when you end an interview,
yeah,
and think to yourself, there is so much more we could have talked about. There is so much more we could have learned.
So many more stories that could have been shared.
Absolutely, about the subject. And this is one of those times.
Yeah, definitely. I think, have you ever watched the first 48?
Yo, sure.
So they
film that in Detroit a lot.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They reference it in their reporting. And I kept thinking, because for me, the delayed cases were always on my mind. Like, that's such a critical amount of time. Once mm-hmm. you find out, or once you hear someone's gone missing, to find them before they may no longer be around, right? And so those delayed cases as element of this story made me really think deeply about how critical those delayed cases are to the results that we find, right? And then once they're misrepresenting that data, we don't really even fully know the extent of the impact of the lack of response.
That's right. They're masking the fact that these go from missing persons cases to homicides mm-hmm. by categorizing it in the data in a way that makes that hard to understand.
And that goes
again to this question of culture. It's not about policy. Mm-hmm. It's about how policy gets interpreted by officers. And that is the toughest part mm-hmm. of police reform in this country. How do you change the way officers see and react to African Americans? Not just when they're dealing with them as potential criminals, but when they are dealing with them as potential victims. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.